Beside you, disciple makers and disciples. And sometimes what happens, if you're really weak in an area that's very vital, you might say, boy, I need to talk to my supervisor, my regional director or something. Maybe we need to transfer one man in or something. And then the sixth thing, and this is very important, what are the needs of my area? What are the needs of my manpower pool? Now think of the needs in terms of five things, A, B, C, D, E. First, evangelism, follow-up, disciple-making, and leadership. Does that sound familiar? 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. Evaluation pyramid, 1, 2, 3, 4. Is it sort of tying together a bit? In other words, by doing the evaluation pyramid and thinking in terms of this, having done that, you will know what the needs are. Having determined what the needs are, then you're ready. So you're then prepared to start working on your objectives, you see. Now, there's one other thing here, that a fifth thing that is very important that hasn't come out from this, and that is what I call the overall need of the area. There was, I forget what area, but traveling through, there have been a couple of areas. But one area, I remember that the area rep, people passed through, and because of the environment and the atmosphere and the ministry and all, it just seemed like that in the whole area there needed to be a real emphasis just on holiness of life. So this is what would be, say, an overall need of the area. In other words, the rep would feel that just everybody needs a real strong emphasis maybe for the next quarter on that matter of holiness of life. Or there was another area that... you know, they were doing these four things, but let's see, what was it? I think maybe in evangelism. You know, there wasn't a real, you know, desire to really get out and win. The whole area just didn't have a real good tone about evangelism. That was, it's related to that, but just, it was a need of the whole area just to really work on that in terms of some special things. And that's where, like, for example, if that... then was an objective, that's where maybe, you know, they might say, well, Leroy, you come and help us in that. See, that's an activity he might come up with to help meet that overall need. But having done that, then you're prepared to get into your planning. Yes. Well, I'd say they're probably... couple of ways. One is the area rep himself. See, an area rep has, walked with God. He's in the Word, and as he takes a look around, just meeting with, you know, the Timothys and the various ones, he might just feel that, boy, I've been reading the Scriptures, and the Holy Spirit of God has been impressing me with this truth, and say servanthood. Boy, I just don't see it anywhere. Well, then he might feel, you know, God's been laying this on his heart that, boy, we just need to work on that. That's one way, the area rep and his walk with God. The second way is by someone else coming in. The regional director comes in, or Leroy comes in. Somebody passes through, maybe another rep. And they say, they make some observations that several times I've noticed this. Well, you might say, you start looking around, you say, well, sure enough, well, we got so busy on something else, we just didn't give attention to that. So then you might feel, now's the time. Or you might feel that, yes, that's a need, but we've got everything else going and just now is not the time to do it. Another area, like Bible. See, like maybe just a grasp of the Word, you know, just an overall view of the Scriptures. That what we've been in our Bible studies, but there's just a little deficiency here just in an overall grasp of the Scriptures. This type of thing. Leroy?
In answer to Jeff's question also, Mark, these things don't normally show up, you know, as, you know, B-52s flying at, you know, 400 feet. They sort of show up as shark fins that cut the water. And you got to, every one of us must pray and ask God to give us that sensitivity to sense that little nick in the water. And then, you know, pretty soon you learn there's a, you know, a 30-foot shark down in there with 8 billion teeth ready to, you know, pop down on you. And it's a sensitivity to sort of pick it up. I remember a contact point I was talking to not long ago, and we were just in conversation, and we were doing things, and it came out various movie titles that he would be familiar with, and the movies. So finally I asked him, you ever gone about movies, going to movies too much? Because I remember some of these things were these X and R rated deals. Well, man, he began to break down and confess to me that was a big problem with him. But it was just something, and in fact, it was in a game, a kind of a party game, and somehow it was charades or some kind of a deal. But I picked that up, took him for a long walk. He hadn't been to a rotten movie since that time, you know. But it was just something that I kind of sensed. And that's something you need to pray for, is that the sensitivity to pick up stuff.
Okay. Yeah, well, we're preparation. Now let's go into planning, and we'll go discuss forecasting. We've mentioned that briefly, but I want to major on objectives, activities, and timetable right now. Now here are some of the ones that we did, some of the reps down in Sydney, and these objectives have to do with your area ministry objectives. Now, you know, we've talked about when you do objectives, there's personal objectives, family objectives, and ministry objectives. So what we're talking about now is just your area ministry objectives, not the personal or the family. And we're not talking about a training objective for some man we're helping. We're just talking about the overall area ministry objectives. Now, when we first started working on this, I noticed that the fellows were spending a lot of time sort of scratching their head about, you know, coming up with some new type of objective, you know, something we'd never thought of before, something different from last time. And it seemed to me that when it comes to area ministry objectives, that, you know, each quarter we still pretty much want to be doing the same type of area ministry. And that basically our objectives go right along with this. And that for each of these needs, I can almost write out just an objective in terms of this. And the fellows almost now, the sentence is almost the same each time, but maybe the number or something changes. In other words, they spend more time evaluating the quality of it rather than the mechanics of the wording of it. But here are four from one of the areas. And we're still working on trying to develop and perfect it, state it better. But at least this is real. I mean, this is what we've been working with. First, to apply the skills acquired. This is, by the way, is for the last quarter of the school year. This is September to November. That was our last quarter. To apply the skills acquired in evangelism with the aim of reaching our target of 45 converts for 1971. Now, in this, for 1971, at our first quarter of the year, we do a little bit of overall planning for the whole year, as well as each quarter. So that was one of these objectives in evangelism. In other words, they've been working on developing skill with the fellas. So now he wanted to make sure that they were out applying it, that the men were out applying it, and that the result was that they reached their goal of 45 converts for the year. Second one here was to produce 5 NAV disciples. And he's actually got the names, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 men, actually who they're going to be. We're not just hoping that somebody's going to become a NAV disciple, but these are the 5 who are just about there. At this quarter, my objective is to see those 5 men become a NAV disciple and fulfill the follow-up training objectives for the 27 other potential NAV disciples. In other words, he had 27 others that were in here, and he wanted to make sure that they made 3 months good growth. That's what he's saying.
How do you take that second?
Fulfill the follow-up training objectives for the 27 other potential NAV disciples. And third, to produce 1 disciple maker. He's got his name. And to fulfill the training objectives for the 15 other potential NAV disciples with the aim that at least 2 of those will become disciples a month later. In other words, they won't make it by the end of the quarter, but 1 month later, they will be there. And let me just say that when a person comes up to this level of almost to a NAV disciple and disciple maker, what we have all the reps doing, as well as the key men, is in their notebook, they have a little checklist of how what kind of progress they're making towards that. And when we first started, what we did is that the rep would turn in that at the end of the year, he felt that we'd have, you know, 10 disciple makers and 25 disciples or something. We found that didn't work too well. I mean, we still do that, but what we found worked even better was to list these names, and that's where he's come up with these 27 potential disciples and 15 potential disciple makers. And what he's done, he has them listed, and not only listed, but then with a month and beside their name when he thinks they'll make it. In other words, that's forecasting. In other words, all things being equal with good growth, I think John here will become a disciple maker in April of 72. And then for that quarter, what does he do? He just adds up the ones that are going to make it in that quarter. But what that's done is that before, where it was just a bunch, then about a week before the quarter, they'd add it up and say, you know, panic program to try to, you know, push them through, and then forget about it for the next 3 months. But if each month you're thinking that these guys will make it, see, and what happened really down there was, when they looked at that and put a month and a date, and they came to the end of the school year like here, and they thought, we don't even get started in Bible study again until March. Well, the reps really got hot on trying to figure out what they were going to do over the summer. Because that was a long gap. But if they were just putting down numbers, well, then they'd sort of rock along over the summer, hope they had a good, nice summer training program, everything went well. You know, the next beginning of the year, sort of think what we're going to do this year. But it really changed the tone of their thinking. Ray was, you know, they were sending their team in out on traveling around, visiting these fellows in their homes out in the country, you know, the ones that were from out of state, city. And they had a bunch of things going, and some of them lived down in by Canberra with John Ridgway. And so they were, he was bringing them in for a weekend a couple times over the summer. John was getting a hold of them, and this type, they came up with a bunch of things they were trying to do. Okay, that's here. Leadership, to provide training to prepare one of the fellows for a contact point assignment, and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. He's got 6 others listed to help them become qualified team leaders during that quarter, during the September-November quarter. Now, that particular quarter, he didn't have anything on overall needs. But that's the idea. The objectives. Then activities. Then he's put down, now what are some of the activities that we could do to meet each of these objectives? So evangelism. What are some of the things? Well, he's got initial contact evangelism, lunch hours on the campus and in the colleges. Friendship evangelism, colleges and the faculties. And natural evangelism as a way of life. Lunchtime encounters. This is one of the things... they came up with a lunchtime meeting, and they found that that really worked good on campus in that particular situation, having a lunchtime thing. And we were official recognized society on the universities there in Sydney, so they get rooms and a weekly lunchtime thing because of being a commuter school really knitted the hearts together and gave them a focal point. This unity thing, it did a little bit for their ministry what, you know, Woodlake's doing for you all. And then he's got activities for the other objectives down here. And then the third thing is timetable. And here's his timetable. Here's this one. Now, this isn't what I was carrying around my notebook. This was sort of, Joe, for the first few times, had the secretary type all this up and put it in, you know, the minutes of our meeting. We sent them out to all the staff so everybody knew what we were doing and to learn from one another. This is sort of the, you know, the distribution copy rather than the work copy. But, let's see, I think I had another one here. Yeah, there's a good example. That's what it looks like.
Is that a quarter on that sheet?
Yes. 13 weeks. So you see, here's the way it runs. I'll just pick two or three days here. Sunday morning planning, church, afternoon family, evening church. See, Monday normally is a day off, but on that particular Monday of that week, Word, Campus, and Planning. See, what was that, September? It could have been that, that was a special time and he had to get over there. He might have taken a day off some other time. Let's see, here on Tuesday, Word, Campus, Bible Study, visit the teams, David Campbell. So he visits some of the teams and also spend time with David Campbell. Saturday, team leaders meeting, run, work, recreation, team night. And then see, he's put in like on the 24th, a day with the Lord. Down here, staff conference. So he's got that time in. Here's Australian staff meeting. And then towards the end here, he's got some days for preparation and planning. Here's a couple days right here, his last week for preparation and planning. Conference, Bible studies. See, public holidays on this month, he's got down what he's going to do with the people because it's a public holiday. A special function he's going to do. He's got that all planned out. Well, that's not everything. It looks like quite a bit, but for 3 months, that's not a whole lot of things. See, that didn't consume all his time, but those are the important things. And then before he squeezes something out, he has to make sure that takes it out, that he's able to put it in. Let's see.
Okay. Do you have a follow-up on that as to, say, a weekly schedule? They schedule each day in a little more detail?
Yes, but this is over the staff man, how he wants to operate, you know. And we have, in other words, we have the overall framework and structure, but we give a lot of leeway for the staff to work it out how he wants to. But what I do, see, when I go to live with Franklin Elliott, we spend some time talking how this has been going, you see. On your objectives, Franklin, to reach the goal of 20 healthy converts. Well, who are the converts now? Bring me up to date. Who are they? How are they doing? Here's your objective. Fulfill training objectives for this fella, these five NAV disciples, and one DM. Okay, so, what's been done on that? Now, see, it's real life. He might say, well, boy, I put that down. We haven't been able to get to it. Well, it's not. If it's reasonable, well, it's reasonable. I mean, and maybe something's had to be changed. It doesn't mean that he's necessarily going to do exactly that for 3 months, You can't change it. But if you do change it, you have a good reason. And so there's some changes are made. But, before God, that's the important thing. And before you change it, you have a good reason for changing it, or you change it to some other time. Like that day with the Lord. See, if something else came up on that day, well, that's no problem. I mean, sometimes that happens, but... See, he's got another one down here. But if it got squeezed out and it didn't get put back in, that's where the problem is. But by doing it this way, you can see that real easily. Then, it's not hard. And then when I'm over with Franklin, we have something to talk about. I mean, there's a basis, not just here am I, interfering with his ministry. See, he stays involved in his ministry. We are talking about his ministry. And I get involved in his ministry. So not only are we involved in the area of ministry, I don't sidetrack him. And also, I get involved in ministry. I'm not just some supervisor sitting up there not involved in the grassroots ministry. I'm involved in it. But rather than spending all my time over here in this one that's mine, I'm spending a little bit of time in his, 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 and I have a great time. Okay, very good question. we try to be very careful to only do it, in other words, not tell the person what we're doing until after we've done it. You see, for example, if I have a fellow becoming a NAB disciple, I have a little plan, a thing I've worked out. Well, I don't, you know, 1 month after he becomes a Christian, I don't say, well, here's all my program for you. Or I just, you know, say, here's some verses to memorize, you know, or, well, let's get in this Bible study. But then after he's done this for a year and he's become a NAB disciple and he's got another fellow he's starting to help, then I start showing him what I've been doing and let him work out this little guide that we'll talk about this afternoon for follow-up. And like for training objectives and all, more of this type of thing, it would be down more in this stage. And it just depends on the level of the person. In other words, I don't have every man in the ministry working out objectives and activities. And to me, it's a bit... we start getting them thinking that way, but tailored to their own situation. And so we start in very casually up here, think about, well, what are you, you know, without writing anything out on paper, what's your purpose in being at university, you know? What's he doing? You can't even start thinking about an objective of why he's there and what he's going to do with his life. But you may discuss it, and you say, well, boy, shouldn't you be, you know, your objective is to become more like God, more Christ-like. Well, shouldn't you be in the Word? Not, what's that? Activities? We meet on Wednesday night, Bible study. What's that timetable? You see, what you're doing in the early stage, you're just discussing it with him, you see. But then as you get on down here, and particularly at the leader stage, and generally as far as writing anything out, I'd say what we've been doing, and I think it just depends on the people. We've probably been getting the team leaders to do some things, you know, writing down some objectives for their team.
Yeah, or something like that.
Yeah. Because these are our leaders. And the reason we're doing that is, why? We're training them in leadership. And now they're getting a point of needing to learn some things about managing an area and leading an area. Okay, let me skip right on down to this last one and say one thing about organization. I think I can get it in before lunch. In doing this, one other aspect of planning is having standard procedures and policies. There are certain things that need to be standardized in order for everybody to be on the same wavelength. Now, I just jotted down some things. I try to put myself planning here now as an area rep. So now, if I'm going to accomplish these things I've been talking about, what kind of standard procedures and policies do I need? So I wrote things down like this. Profile of an NAB disciple and disciple maker. See, I felt that everybody, my team leaders and all, we all need to be talking about the same thing. I said, well, we've got one. So no problem, we'll just use it. See, that's simple. And I thought, okay, I have a developed ministry, so I also need to think about a profile of a PAR. At this particular time, we didn't have one, so I had to make a note of that. And then I thought about, what else do I need? Requisites for a contact point. And whatever they call a girl who's doing the same thing. Because in some of the areas, if Ray Ewers here is preparing one of his men to be a contact point, what do we need? We need some kind of a standard of what that person's looking like. So the man Ray is preparing for that has the same qualification as one Franklin's doing, or Jack, or Merv, or anybody else. So we need some kind of a standard. So I said, do we have that? Okay. In PAN, yes, we've got a PAN profile, a contact requisite. So we need that. Oops, could you fix that for me there? Requisites for a contact point, for a girl's contact point. And then I thought, what else do we need? Well, for me, I have some fellows that are going to become reps. So what do I need? I need the same thing for what a rep is for me. So I put that down. And same thing for the girls, whatever they call girls who are doing that. We're still working on our terminology. Now, what else do I need in terms of anything that's standard? Well, there are a couple other things I thought of that we need to make sure that everybody's on the same wavelength, and that is any international navigator policies. Okay, we've got an international navigator policy manual. But I need to make sure that in the planning that all the reps know what's in there, see, so all their objectives and activities are in line with that policy. So that's another standard, international policies. Now, we also have a PAN policy manual applied to the Pacific area, so they also need to know that. Now, the way that works, like the PAN policy manual was just for representatives. So what I had to make sure in terms of standards is that anything applied to any of my contact points, that I'd pass that word on to them, anything that's in there as a standard that was relevant to their ministry. I need to make sure that they got that. Personnel audit, the PAN personnel audit, that's a standard. Everybody has to be on the same wavelength doing the same thing. And then I thought, now here's how this works. See, as I was thinking about that, the time before we had had some discussion about these decisions that we'd come up with and put on our list, you know, when we'd reported converts. And in our staff discussion, we decided that some of these so-called decisions were not really converts. We try to figure that out, and we decide we all need to be on the same wavelength just in our local area on who was a convert. So we came up with something that how we would call a person a convert. So we had to work up a little thing, a profile of a convert. See, so there were two things that, see, all these other things are things we had, but these were things that we didn't have. Now, the profile of PAR, that applied to the whole region. As a matter of fact, it applied to all of PAN. So we had to work it out on a PAN basis. This was just something we did on a local basis. And basically, the way this works, if you need something like a standard, there's not a higher authority, then you do your own. I mean, if Joe Simmons hadn't given me a profile, you know, if there wasn't a regional profile, then I just do one for Sydney. Then another thing that came up, well, we didn't quite, well, that was coming up, is a standard for who a team leader is. Okay, so these were some of the things we worked out. And the way we worked it out, for example, was like profile of a convert. We came up for Sydney, it was just a simple thing, three things. It seemed to be scriptural, and that is that a person, when he becomes a Christian, should have a change in attitude towards God and Jesus Christ, should have a change in attitude towards sin, and a change in attitude towards the Word of God. His change in attitude towards God and Christ is that now he's favorable towards God and Christ. His change in attitude towards sin is he's repented. And a change in attitude towards the Word, that he has some appetite for the Word. Now, we didn't put down, you know, he has to memorize all these verses and do all this stuff just to be a convert. But scripturally, it seems like if a person doesn't have some change in attitude where he's favorable to God, that there's a question whether he's really a born-again believer. So with the fellas, in order to put a man down as a convert, they had to for example, may he start going to church now. You know, well, okay, it's simple, but there was something. Change in attitude towards sin. Well, if he just wants to live his own life the way he's always done, not make any change, Christ said, except you repent, you cannot be born again. So, okay, he may have prayed and made a decision, but we didn't call him a convert. And third thing, appetite towards the Word. Well, he didn't have to do everything, but if he refused, he wouldn't listen to us share the Word, he wouldn't go to church, he wouldn't memorize a verse, he wouldn't do a Bible study, he wouldn't read the Bible, do nothing, say, well, I'm not sure whether the Holy Spirit's done a work in his life. And what happened? It wasn't that he did or didn't. It was unobserved, what we found. And then that alerted us, okay, we need to go do something to observe it. And we found out a very significant thing. It's much easier to follow up converts than decisions. But the other thing they did is that they didn't drop the decisions. They kept cultivating the decisions and made the guy make a, you know, later on he would really become a real convert. See, sometimes a person has to make three or four so-called decisions before it really, the real thing happens. In other words, those decisions were a real good source of our converts, so we kept cultivating them. But it really it changed our statistics around a bit, but it really helped our follow-up. But what it did do, it gave us a very clear picture of where we really stood in the ministry, and that's an important thing in terms of evaluation. Okay? So why don't we stop there? I think, yeah, it's lunchtime. I think that's all of planning. So we'll have lunch. For this session, I want to go into structured training and selecting PARs. Before I start on the structured training, there have been two or three questions that have come up that I think are relevant to the whole group that I'd just like to make a few brief comments on, by way of review of what we have done so far. The first has to do with job descriptions. We talk about having a written job description. And as far as who initiates it, does the person initiate it or does his supervisor initiate it? In other words, should you wait for your supervisor to give you one or should you write one out? You know, what should you do? Well, the answer to that is it doesn't matter. And the principle you have to keep in mind is that whether you initiate it or whether your supervisor initiates it, is that to make it workable, there has to be mutual agreement. So that here it is. You have to be happy that that's your job, and your supervisor has to be happy that if you do your job, he'll be happy. Now, what we did down in Australia and New Zealand is that Joe came up with sort of a guideline or a format, then each rep took it and reworked it and made it his own, and then Joe took a look at it and see if he was happy with it, and then sort of, in a sense, approved it. Now, in the job description, We had three main parts. The first part had to do with personal time in the Word and prayer. And we actually put that into the job description. This would be above and beyond your normal time in the Word and prayer as a Christian. But Joe felt that for the staff in Australia and New Zealand, we should have extra time in the Word and prayer be above and beyond what we'd normally do, you know, our quiet time and normal Bible study and the things that we do just because we're Christians. And so we wrote that in our job description. And in your job description, if you want to, if there's a need, you can also make it very specific. And in our case, we felt that we wanted to make it specific, so he actually allowed us to put in, if we wanted to, an actual number of hours a week that would be our job to do. Then the second thing had to do with ministry. And in the ministry section, it was stated that you are responsible and have the authority for the Navigator ministry at University of Sydney or wherever it was, which includes a program for doing the ministry in four areas. Four keeps coming back up, but in each of these four areas. And then the third part of the job description had to do with administrative responsibilities, turning in your required reports on time and things of that nature. And one of the keys to making a job description relevant is the quality. And what I spent time on was actually going over and reviewing and really praying about, now, if the person does do that job, am I happy with that? And this does take some prayer, and there are a few points in the job sometimes that you really have to wrestle with and come to grips with. Is that really the right job? It's not so, you know, just crank it out in 10 minutes. You know, these something that's really quick and easy to come by, generally it sort of comes by and keeps going. But when you wrestle with it and pray with it and really get it down personalized and relevant, then it's very workable. Well, that's just some thoughts on job description. Then the second thing that came up, a couple comments along the line of organization. Structuring has to do with your organizational structure. And this would have to do with things like who should be on your teams, how many teams should you have, who should be on them. This type of thing has to do with structuring. And also, organizational chart comes under this matter of structuring. And I'd like to just make one comment on an organizational chart that might help us in our training of men. Here are two organizational charts. This is just a skeleton outline. It's not a real chart, but it's just to give you an idea. It never works out so neatly. Chart A here is what comes our way from the military and from business. In the military, basically, there's one man, the captain of the ship. He has these department heads who in turn have their officers under them who in turn have this. And you never violate the chain of command. You go right up the chain of command in a very neat, systematic, symmetrical manner. This is a military concept. Business concept also operates very much in the same way. One man has all these men on one level, and that is his job. And I feel that in a navigator ministry of making disciples, that some at certain levels we may need to have this type of organizational chart. However, the one thing that this type of organizational chart does is it leaves out one essential element of the ministry. And I mentioned this morning about knowledge, experience, and observation. And when you have a chart like this, these team leaders are leading teams, but they do not see and do not observe the rep leading a team. In other words, he's leading this team, but that's not the same as leading a team at the level they're leading it. This organizational chart here is drawn up to accomplish that, so that the rep not only has three team leaders, but in addition, the rep is a team leader. Now, the rep cannot be a team leader if he has so many team leaders here that that's a full-time job. So you have to pray and really decide what's really important. And also, however, sometimes, you know, these men are working or something, the rep may be full-time, so the rep does have more time. That's a positive factor in enabling him to do that. And what generally happens is if the rep is a team leader, he needs one man here who is an assistant team leader so that if he has to be gone or something like this, the team functions carry on. But what this does is that these team leaders can observe the rep leading a team just like they're leading a team. But it doesn't make such a nice, neat organizational chart, but I think it might help our own ministry.
Mark, wouldn't the rep's team be those team leaders in A? Now going back to A.
Yeah, well, that's what I say. That's the normal tendency to say, oh, the rep's team are these four team leaders. Well, my statement is, okay, my statement is the rep should have two teams.
Okay, then when would they observe him leading his team?
Well, where it comes out is the fact, well, if necessary, the rep can have this team leader sit, you know, get in on activities if he feels that's necessary. But the key thing is the fact that the rep is doing it right now is that he has up-to-date stories that when he gets with these fellows, say this man's living in his house, they talk over the thing. And he says, well, this is what I did yesterday. What are you doing this week? You know, type of thing. And even though they might not physically be in on all the things he does with his team, the fact that he's doing it and they're sharing together, you know, everyday type of thing makes it alive, relevant, fresh, right up to date. And also, because this is all one big team, these fellows know all these fellows too, you see. And that's a lot different than the rep saying, well, 10 years ago, when I was leading a team back in the old day, it worked this way.
Then you're
your rep or whoever, this contact point or whoever I am out there, if I'm an LDM down here, and my arrows go all three directions, right? I got U men, F, U, and BMs, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing all that.
But the amount of time you spend doing all of it is the key thing. See, this man here, you have to just pray over, you know, how you should spend your time in each of these four areas. And what I've been saying is you stay involved in all of them. But as your job changes, your responsibilities change, you just have to pray over what is the need of the hour in your ministry at this particular time. But what I'm saying, the reason I brought this up is just simply sort of our natural tendency, it seems to me, as we go around, is that very soon we try to set up this neat little organization. And so I have two or three team leaders, and pretty soon that's my team, and I could easily go out and have my own Bible study, my own team, but because I've been programmed mentally to think this way, when I go to structure my area of ministry, I don't even try to structure it this way because I'm so programmed that this is the nice way, that's the way it should be.
Where would contact points fit in?
Well,
leaders equivalent to contact points?
No, here, this would be contact point or rep.
Yeah. Say it's a rep, and let's say he's supervising, you know, some contact points. How does that fit in?
Well, I have a little theory on that, and this is completely unofficial, but since you ask, and that is, as I look around of reps, you know, fully qualified reps, compared to a contact point. What I see is that there are some of these reps who are what I would call repping. They have their ministry, the campus or whatever it is, and they are there actually doing the navigator ministry. There are other reps that are directors, and they have maybe six, eight men scattered around on various bases or wherever it is, and their full-time job is supervising these men. In the Navigators, I feel we do need, in addition to regional directors, these direct reps who are directing area directors because we're growing and all. But not to the exclusion of the rep who is repping. Because I believe that in the Navigators, the thing that's made the Navigators unique, the thing that's been the biggest secret of the Navigator success is the fact that we have had area representatives, or maybe not, don't concentrate on the terminology, but a qualified man concentrating in one pool of manpower where day in and day out he's there giving his life, witnessing, following up, giving his life to people, as opposed to being sort of a traveling, you know, going around and checking in every two or three months. And I believe that the secret of raising up disciple makers has been that qualified man on the scene. And this is what I mean by repping. Now, I think a rep can maybe supervise one or two contact points and still have enough time on campus to really do that. But once you get up to four or five or six, if you're doing a good job supervising, it takes enough time out supervising, getting involved in their ministry, that either you're not doing a good job supervising or you're not doing a good job in your local ministry. And once you get that many, then you're directing. And what I see happening is that because we're growing so fast, is that we have a lot of reps who are directing, which we need, but we don't have a lot of reps repping, which I feel we really need. And if we don't work on that, that 5 or 6 years from now, we'll see we don't have a real solid, deep group of navigators. I was talking to one man who feels that even today, the navigator men are a little shallow compared to what they were 10, 15 years ago. They don't have, what do you call it, that bit of steel in their soul or something like that. And I think that's... Leroy qualifies. It's not in his soul, it's in his leg.
Well, is that an organizational flaw there that we should develop smaller regions, or if we got eight to build contact points?
Well, it's something. Well, it's just one of those things that with growth, of course, the organization's always changing. It's just one of those things that we just need to keep alert to, and you never get quite the ideal organization because it's always dynamic, it's always changing. Unless, well, the alternative to that is to stagnate, and we don't want to do that. So we will have to keep working with it. But we have, if we don't recognize it, that's the problem. But so anyway, that's there's the key. And what that does, you see, is in this matter of observation here again, if we do not have qualified reps repping, then these men who are coming up like team leaders who are just about to be contact points, there is no qualified person that they can observe actually doing the ministry. Because the ones who are qualified are no longer doing it. And I've observed this around. As a matter of fact, I took the Western Division and added up all the reps we have and to see how many are actually repping. And then when you divide that among university ministries and servicemen's ministry, if I had a team leader man who I wanted to be under a rep for a year, say, actually observing him repping, well, I figured there's very few places he could go. To see that.
What about your contact points?
Well, there probably are contact points where this team leader could learn from the contact point. But by definition, a contact point is still learning. He's out in his first time seeing if he really has learned it. So sort of by definition, in a sense, he's not qualified. He's trying to see if he is qualified. Now, I tend to think that there are contact points who are qualified for him to learn from them. But just, you know, if you state strictly by definition, if he is qualified, then he would be a rep, you see. It's a little bit of a organizational semantical thing. Okay, let's go on. Staffing simply has to do, like, if you have teams, well, who should, you know, staffing, who are the people who lead those teams? That's a very simple thing. And I think that's all I want to say on organizing. And I would just mention one other thing for you. Many of you, I think, have seen this book called Managing Your Time by Ted Engstrom, who's a chief executive officer of World Vision. And he's taken a lot of the secular management principles and applied them in a Christian context. And it fits in with a lot of this that we're talking about. And I think managing your time is a little bit... Sounds like manage your time. It sounds a good name. Basically, I think the level of management he's talking about would very well apply to the staff level. Down at the team leader level and all, it's not all that relevant, but I think it's very relevant at the staff level. And I'd encourage you to read it and study this. There's some good ideas in there, very much along the line of what we're talking about.
Back to job description, you include under that, you mentioned personal time, responsibility for the ministry and administrator. Do you include with your people, under the job description, things like their family life?
Yes.
Is that a part of their job description, or do you work that in a separate category?
What we did, and you can make it fit your own situation, but in our region we felt that because of the navigator ministry being so integrally related to the family, that we felt that part of a rep's job is to have a good family life. So we put that in.
You put that in the second part, responsibility for the navigator.
Well, that was ministry. No, we combined family up under the personal. Yeah. And also because we were low. See, in the job descriptions, you can tailor it to the needs of your staff. Because we were weak in things like time off, taking vacations and things, we actually wrote that in there, that part of your job is make sure you don't work. How's that? Okay, structured training. Now let me, just by introduction to structured training, give you a little bit of an idea of where we're headed. What I want to do is give you sort of the overall picture And some of the principles and concepts that we'll talk about first, just the overall idea of structured training. And the basic principles or format, you might say, will apply in all these different stages of training. But then what you have to do is recognize the stage and then adapt it to the need of the person. So right up in this stage, you're dealing with spiritual infants. And it's a bit like children. See, what you do with a little two-year-old child, the principle of, you know, parents' concern and care and how you go about it is, you know, for a two-year-old, the same as a 15 or 16-year-old, but you do it a little bit differently. And like training objectives, well, that's one part of the concept, is this matter of training objectives. Well, we have training objectives for these people up here, but it could be they're much simpler and much more quickly accomplished. So like a training objective here, I might accomplish two training objectives in 1 week because they're simple. For example, the training objective might be to get the man to memorize word perfect, the four verses in the beginning with Christ. Well, that doesn't take all that long to do that. Where down here, like one of the fellows who was a contact point becoming a rep, well, one of the training objectives I was working with him on, it took me 6 months, almost most of the year, because of the type of training objective, it was more significant. It had to do with how do you manage your area. So we worked for 6 months or a year on this type of thing. And it's like Sandy was saying one time, he noticed that with his small children, they need a little bit of attention, but very frequently. And with the older ones, that they didn't need it as frequently, but when they had the time, it needed to be more significant. So the principles and concepts will apply all the way around, but you have to gear them in at the level that you're doing the training. So what I want to do first is give you the sort of the principles and concepts, and then we'll go into a guide for follow-up, how you can actually have something specific here, and also something for these two stages. And then the last part of that will be, in connection with this, will be the selection of PARs. And that will be all we'll do. Okay, three things on structured training in terms of the overall picture. The first thing is to know your goal. Know your goal. Now, what is your goal? Where do you get that goal? Well, one place you get that goal is from the profile. So, when you're up in this stage, what's your goal? Well, the profile of an NAV disciple. When you're down here, what's your goal? Profile of a disciple maker. Selecting PARs, what's your goal? Well, or how do you select that? Well, the profile of a PAR. In other words, that's the way you know what your goal is. Profiles plus syllabus. And at different levels, you may have, in addition, just to like right here, in addition to those 7 points of an NAV disciple, this is, you may have some syllabus, some things that you'd like to see the person accomplish in terms of a goal by the time he comes to this level of being a NAV disciple. Now, in having a syllabus, there's one principle that we want to make sure we don't violate, and that is making it harder than the profile. The profile is the standard. So whatever syllabus, anything extra that you're doing with this man before he's a NAV disciple, you don't want to make it harder than what the profile says. In other words, like here for a disciple maker, how many men does he have to make to be a disciple maker? Disciple. What does your profile say? Two? Is it two? One? Two? One? Okay, one. One or two. So now, if you're in your syllabus, you said he had to do four before it became, well, then you would be making it harder than what the profile says. But there are things that supplement and fit in with the profile, and this is where the syllabus comes in. And then the second thing is the scriptures, the Bible.
Would you hold it differently?
Yes.
Profile plus syllabus.
Yes. Well, those are the two things you use in establishing the goal. So,
I mean, when you say plus syllabus, have you made it harder than the profile or
no? No. In other words, that's what I was saying, is that the syllabus includes things that you want to see at that level, but the level of difficulty, you might say, should not be more difficult than what this would be. And I think that will clarify itself when we go into detail on this. And the second thing is the scriptures. And what I find happening in terms of helping a person is that, say you have these 7 points of the profile. Okay, you're walking with God, you're going over the scriptures, you know the Bible becomes part of your life, and you're helping this man, and there's just something comes up in his life, some problem or something that you see. Say, for example, the Bible says, do not lie. And you notice that he told you something that's a lie. Well, that's not in the, you know, exactly. It's sort of inferred or something. But it may not be spelled out just exactly here. In other words, when you start talking about character and life and all this, there's a whole lot in here. And the profile is sort of a simplification in getting it down, but there might be some real need, something that might be holding that man back. As you pray, as you get to know him in light of the Bible, you feel you just should share that with him. In other words, the scriptural standard then becomes a goal. In other words, if there's you see that his life, there's a measurable difference, then that gives you a reference of what it, you know, how to help him in his life. So that's knowing the goal. Now, I'll come back to this. Let me just give you the other two things. Point three is know your man or know your girl. In other words, know your goal, then know your man or know your girl. And then the third thing is to know how to train. I think if you get those three things, that will help you in your structured training. Know your goal, know your man or know your girl, and the third thing is know how to train. Now, I want to talk about those three things just a little bit more in detail. Know your goal. Now, here's one little simple thing that helps me in keeping on track concerning my goal. This is my notebook. And to make some of this relevant, it has to be workable. So in my notebook, this is my U.S. notebook, in my Australian notebook, I had a sheet so that, say, for the University of New South Wales, or like here, the University of Sydney, I had a little checklist. What's the goal? The goal is disciple makers. Now, the thing that I was particularly interested in is disciple makers. I think the rep probably would need in his notebook a list of those who are becoming disciple makers and another list of those who are becoming disciples. And probably another list of those who have just become converts. But the way this works, this is your disciple making list. Now, this does not mean those who have qualified, but those who are becoming disciple makers, those who are in this stage. Now, this is the University of Sydney, and I've put some of the names of the guys down at the University of Sydney. And the way this works is this enables you to keep track of where they are in terms of your goal. Your goal is the profile, and these columns are the profile. And also, to keep it fresh in my thinking, I also had written out on a sheet what, you know, the profile in my notebook. So I had it right there. I was, you know, had it right before me. Now I have 7 columns, 8, 9, 10, 11. Now the reason for these first 7 columns is that's number 1 in the DM profile. Let me see if I have that. See, the first point in the profile of a disciple maker is that he or she evidences growth in the virtues and skills listed under our profile of a navigator disciple. How many points under profile of a navigator disciple? 7 points. So that gives me a place to record whether he's making evidences growth in those 7 things. So just because he's become a disciple, I can't forget those seven things. Otherwise, I've just overlooked the first point of the disciple-maker profile. So that's what those seven columns are. Column number two is point number two. He or she has demonstrated his or her ability to lead others to Christ personally. Okay, column number two. Number three has to do with raising up one new Christian who meets the qualifications of our profile of a navigator disciple. Column four, he or she is currently engaged in the task of disciple making. Column five, he or she is memorizing scripture regularly on his own and is systematically engaged in chapter analysis, Bible study, or the equivalent. So this gives you a record, and you can see at a glance then whether Colin Marshall is, you know, what he lacks, why he is not, you know, what he lacks in meeting the profile of a disciple maker. Now, the way I use this that's helped me most is not just to tick it off, check it off, but rather I try to write, I make this big enough so I can write in one or two words that will give me something specific on that point. For example, where it says leading people to Christ, number two, well, I'd write in, you know, two or three names of the people they've led to Christ rather than just ticking it off. Or discipling. Probably what I would do there is write in the people they're following up and then mark it whenever that person becomes a disciple. That tells me not only when they've arrived at it, but also who they're working with. And here, under these, anything, just a word or two that would give me some specific thing. Because what I've found happens when I go over and ask Franklin, you know, how's Colin Marshall doing in point, you know, this one right here, say. Often what happens, there's not a clear yes or a clear no. It's unobserved. I have a feeling that it's yes, but when I try to pin it down specifically, how do you know yes? Well, he's been around a long time. In other words, there's not a clear-cut incident that would tell me yes or no. And then, when I look at it that way, what does that tell me? Well, when I'm spending personal time with that man or in the ministry, I want to be looking for that. And I become much more observant in looking at a man and discerning his needs because I have my eyes open to the things that really matter. And these profiles have been worked out by men who have had a lot of experience in the ministry, the things that really matter. Okay, know your goal. And then know your man or know your girl. And I've just jotted down a few of the things that